All right, welcome you all to class. Thank you for being here. Everything green up here on this board is for us, so you can be thinking about that. I didn't bring a handout. Can you guys see it? Can you see it? Barely? I was wondering if the green would show up very well. I'll read it out loud too. But we have, why should I have devotions? We're going to talk about that close to the beginning. And then right after that, we're going to talk about what you think about when you saw the title, Deliberate Devotions. Later on, we're going to talk about where we receive inspiration, and at the end, I would like to have a little bit of a longer time for you guys to share your ideas, because I have ideas, but with a lot of people like this, it's good to get a lot of different opinions or things that worked. And this is the emergency plan. My favorite story, the morning that Wendell called me for this talk, he says, he called me up, and right away, he was like, "Morning, what do you have? What are you doing for devotions this morning?" And it was Monday morning. I had been gone that past Friday, so I had a stack of checking still. And I was thinking about doing my, still thinking about trying to study for that morning. And I was supposed to be thinking about program practice. Anyway, so I had a stack high list of stuff to do, and devotions is kind of the last thing on the list. So I quickly tried to run through my, this is plan A, and if that doesn't work, we're going to do this, and if that doesn't work, we're going to do this. I had my list. Anyway, so I'm going to give you a few things that I have on my emergency plan, but I'd like to hear from you too, what works when you're absolutely in a bind and need to come up with something quick. All right, let's start with prayer. Dear Lord, we just want to thank you for today. Thank you for this class. Thank you that we can all be here. I just want to ask that you would be here today and that you would lead out and help us to gain something that will help us in the year ahead. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, I'd like to take you on a quick memory trail of my own. When I was thinking about this, I'm a farmer, so I sit on the swather a lot in the summer. And if this seems to go in circles, it's because I was thinking about it while I was going round and round. but I started out just thinking and trying to go way back and think of devotionals that I remember. And if you ever try it, you actually can come up with quite a lot. I didn't think I could remember any at the first. And then I was asking different people. The first one I'm going to start off with is my Uncle Glenn. I called him and asked him. He's a great guy to ask this kind of stuff. And he said, "Oh yeah, that's easy." When he was in grade two, they were having church in a Grange Hall, or in school in a Grange Hall, and my grandpa came for devotions. And he explained the difference between knowledge and wisdom. And I was like, "Well, that's really random. Like, how did you ever remember that?" And he said, "Oh, that was easy." He said, "It's this old cowboy. My grandpa, is a farmer and looks like it." And he said, just this old cowboy being able to take something like knowledge and wisdom and be able to put it into something that a second grader could actually understand. He said that stuck with him. All right, and here comes my first thing out of the brown paper bag, and this I've been waiting for a long time to show you guys. This was not a devotional, it was my a children's class when I was about 4 or 5. I don't really remember what the speaker said, but it's just a very vivid picture in my mind. The grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. It's something that stuck with me. So yeah, if you can find it, it's something worthwhile to have. And then the last thing that I thought I'd tell you, there's piles more. But when I was in third grade, I believe it was me and 6 girls, and we were having devotions the one morning, and Miss Krista said, she was like, "Penny, could you read the poster on the front of my desk?" And so Penny read it off. It said something like, "God hears even the weakest cry for help." And then she told the story about Ishmael and Hagar out in the desert when Hagar left Ishmael under the bush and then went off and then saw the spring of water. Anyway, when the time that I remember this was in my first year of teaching. I was about ready to quit a couple times, and walking home through the woods, I can remember that, and almost ready to grab the phone and call the school board chairman. Anyway, I remember that devotional from third grade, and I waited till the next morning and things looked better. It came back a couple times that year, and obviously I'm still here today, so I made it out okay. All right, I already mentioned the questions on the board. We'll get to them in a little bit. I had a quote that a lady told me yesterday that I was going to tell you. And it went something like this: the Pope and the pauper together are better than either of them separately. And that's kind of why I would like all your help on this class today, because I've been thinking about this for a long time, but if we get lots of perspectives on this, on deliberate devotionals, we'll probably come out with a better idea of deliberateness than if it's just me talking up here all the time. Okay, so let's see here. The importance of devotions. And I'd like to just give you a quick, some synonyms of deliberate: calculated, careful, intentional. And let's go actually to the second question right away. What do you think about when you saw or when you see the title deliberate devotionals? What are some things that come to your mind? Good. Definite goal, not just filling time. I love that. Good. Thought out. Well thought out. Well, yeah, some of mine were thought out, but not well. Okay, it doesn't just happen. Like, I think on the, I liked how whoever wrote the description of this is quickly stirred out of the mud. Good. Okay. Right. Thank you for that. And I just, I'll cover it right now because I know it's not in my notes, but I did think about it. I sat in a devotional class where the teacher said, it's actually Neil Hackman, he said, do not address disciplinary problems in your classroom in devotions. But then my co-teacher, Conrad Smucker, he said, I was just asking these questions about devotions that you remember. And one of his students said, oh yes, there was this devotions one time that he talked about. It was this huge problem in his classroom that they were all negatively talking about themselves. Like they would just degrade themselves. And it was pretty bad. Conrad went ahead and just gave his devotional around that. And that was a devotional that one of them said he remembered vividly because they needed it at the time. So it was two kind of opposing ideas. But I don't know, does anybody want to try to bring them together for me? I haven't quite got them together, but
it seems like for a thing like that where it was a class issue, it'd be a little different than just one or two students. And
right.
Pointedly have it.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I think too, if you're careful not to call out a student in a devotion, but at the same time having a devotions and then later on that day talking to the student and referencing back to what I talked about this morning can be super helpful.
Yeah, I love that. The way one of my friends said, he said you lay a foundation for it, and then later when you're having the problem during the day, you can reference back. I love the way you said that.
One friend who had that experience in church, mm-hmm. both ways, she said, it's different when you're offered hope rather than just accusation.
Okay, yeah. So, in a way, with the devotional you're giving, maybe not calling down the specific behavior, but possibly holding up the standard of good that you want for your students. And then when later on in the day when they are not doing that, you can point them back. Okay, good. Any more thoughts?
What I usually do is that we know that we have a problem in the school, an issue, and they all know.
Right.
Not so many. They all know, and we address it. I address it personally, choosing the passage from the Bible that talks about that problem, and giving the Bible standard without doing more than that.
Right.
And they basically, I don't give names or I don't mention the problem, but they all understand what's all about. And then sometimes the guys who were involved just came to me after and talked to me about it. You don't have to give names.
Right. Okay, let's move on to the top question then. Why should we have devotions at all? This is kind of going back, and it's very, very basic, but I asked a few adults, and they gave me this blank look stare, and we kind of always did it that way, and we're Christian Day School, which it is a good starting point, but you know, the first year that I taught, the main reason devotions was on the schedule was because the 10 years that I went to school, my teachers all had it. So, why do we have devotions?
What we're trying to do in the first place is point them to Jesus Christ.
Thank you. That's probably the most important one, is to point our students to Jesus Christ. And devotions is a wonderful time to do that. I like that one too. When we're swathing at the beginning of every field, our swathers have auto steer. So, but it's the same idea. You set your first line at the beginning of the field. The whole field is based off of that one line, and devotions is like that. You focus your students' attention, and then the rest of your day can be based off of that. Good. Okay.
Talking about being honest. For a whole pattern, and all the devotions were focusing on that, to build their character on that.
Right. I like that. And so it was like the whole school.
Yeah,
whole school.
All the teachers.
Yeah.
Like, three or four teachers. And even the parents, if they sometimes one day of the week, the parents come and devotion, they were informed about it.
Okay.
And they picked
up
the passages and the verses that correspond.
I see. I like that idea.
Could it also be for the teachers' good? We should have our personal devotions too, obviously, but also you get to school at 6:30 or whatever in the morning, and that whole couple hours is just some frantic, and I know for me, just that time of stopping and studying for what we were going to talk about, what I was going to talk about for devotions, kind of helped me get my focus right.
It straightened it out, yeah. Which brings up an interesting question.
This brings us to
go ahead.
Something more personal, right? We are all teachers, but when you have emotions, it gets more personal.
Right.
Because actually you are responsible in front of that for every word that you say there. And this got me the point in which I really have to search my words, you know. So why am I telling them? Because
right.
It's not that easy. So it's better for us not to talk about what we know and with weak points and all that, you know, and then search ourselves, build up a little bit there,
and then talk about it. Okay, we're going to leave my brilliant question for the moment. Okay, are there any other why we should have devotions?
It's been brought up a few times here at these meetings, but we've been examples. It's kind of a an example to our students and our zeal for the Lord. And if it's not a deliberate devotion, something we haven't been studying for, just a quick thing that will quick stir it up, our students are going to know.
We'll pick up really quick.
This past year, during program packs and all that, there was a few mornings where I had just sang for devotion instead, and one morning I said, I'm going to have devotions. One of the students asked me, are you actually going to have devotions this morning? And kind of out to me a little bit, well, I guess maybe I should do this more faithfully.
Yeah, right.
It's not just something that's on, yeah, it has to be on the schedule, but it needs to come that we want to do it, not just that
right. And I have noticed for myself, if I've done a couple, you know, pull out of the bag devotions, it seems like they come in a whack all at once, usually. Like it's 3 weeks when you're running behind. If you do actually stop and study for devotions, it seems like the children pick up on that right away. Like you can actually see that they're like, oh, we actually get to hear him talk this morning. Okay. Let's see here. Anything else before we move on? If not, I'd like to give you a maybe worst case scenario that actually happened. In United States schools, you know that they do not read the Bible anymore. In 1955 is when that whole thing kind of started. 1955, well, I shouldn't say that. Since before the United States started, there has been many... Hello, Wendell. That guy just scared me. It's okay. Okay, where was I? 1955, New York schools enacted a recommendation. It wasn't a law. They did not have to do it, but they gave a prayer that the students, that the teachers were supposed to pray with their students in the mornings. They recommended that they do this, and a lot of schools did. The prayer was this: Almighty God, we acknowledge our dependence on Thee, and we beg Thy blessings upon us, our parents, our teachers, and our country. They put this in because they wanted to fight against juvenile delinquency and communism. Those are their two. That's why they put this in. In 1962, there was a Jew that saw his son praying with folded hands and bowed head, and that was, I guess, very against the Jewish culture, and he actually took one of those schools to law. And in 1962, we had the United States ruled that it was unconstitutional to have prayer in the public schools. That was the one that went all the way to the Supreme Court. If you read...
Where did it start? What was the first state to start with?
When was the first? 1955 was when they put that prayer in. 1962 is when they took it out.
But did they start with a certain state or all areas?
No, see, that went all the way to the Supreme Court.
Okay.
And so, it was for everything then. 1963 then is when they took Bible reading out of public school as well. One of the judges that presided over that case, in his notes about it, he mentioned that by taking that out, they were taking something out that had been in place from before the United States began. Okay, and then since that time, I was going to read some... I must have put it in my stack of papers at home that I didn't need. I was going to read, there's about five things that happened. One was students' grades dropped drastically the next 18 years after they did this. They say divorce rate jumped 100%. Since that time, crime has gone up very drastically. Just different results of that. And in 2014, there was actually a person who, a professor from California, that wrote an argument trying to get prayer and Bible reading back into schools to help fight all this stuff. I don't know that it will happen, but somebody's trying anyway. All right, so we probably won't have to directly deal with that, but Satan wants to do the same thing with our classrooms, and we've talked about it already, that trying to fill our devotionals with just fluff. He wants us to put the mediocre in instead of the actual truth. We need to be teaching our students truth. And whatever we're talking about, the different, you know, object lessons, stories, they all need to complement truth. The truth needs to be the main focus of our devotionals. Okay. So just right at the end, I'd like to give two verses. Let's see, the one was Thy word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. That is what you're giving your students, a lamp and a light. The other verse to think about is, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free or set you free. That's another thing that you're giving your students when you give them the truth. All right, so we're kind of in between parts on my notes. I would like to have you guys group up into groups of about five. There's five ladies in the front and four back there, you'll be fine. And then if you get five back there at Anthony, you could be with them too. I'm just going to hand out objects. I would like to hear what you have. I would like you to tell me what lesson you would put with this object. So, my little sister said,
Seth, don't do that because it'd be embarrassing. But
so, go ahead and talk about it. You have a few minutes. Okay, you all ready? I know I'm asking you all to do something that usually you have more time to do, not 2 minutes, but that's why we had five heads in each. Okay, let's just go around, even if you don't. It's what I'd like to do with this is just kind of give you all an idea. You can see the object that you have. And hopefully next year when you're in February or March and dead, you can remember some. Okay, so take this if somebody's going to tell me.
Well, I had been thinking about procrastination because if you look at your alarm and you skip waking up every 5 minutes, you feel so good, but later it sets off your whole day on a wrong foot. And it's a habit that you build up. And you only have a certain amount of time.
Yes, ma'am.
Not annoying to others in the house if you would be exhausted.
Heidi had a thought that dependency, cloths are horribly annoying when they are not dependent.
Okay.
And you think people who are not dependent are not fun to be around you.
Okay. Yeah, I love that.
Next group back there, what did you have? Oh yeah, the ticket.
Oh, and the
ticket.
Oh, let's see here. You guys back there.
We're thinking of our words. There's several here that were not shot, several that were shot.
Okay.
We're thinking that once we the unused bullet there is an unspoken word, and once it has been spoken, we can't take that word back. It was either used to damage or to provide for something.
Okay. Yeah. Nice.
The devotion.
All right, and
you'd be so little bit.
We've kind of come up with the idea that our lives get kind of dirty after a while. We may need to apply the word of prayer.
Okay. Okay, thank you all for doing that. All right, I'd like to move now into preparation a little bit more. And this part feels like it's been hammered this week already, that you have to start with yourself. Hello, Verda. You have to start with yourself before you can pass anything on to anyone else. It's like this light here. One day I was out of devotional ideas, so I took the long way around to school. I could walk to school from where I was, and I was praying about it and walking along, and I found a flashlight just like this one laying on the road, and I picked it up and finished walking to school, and then I had a devotions on the verse, "Ye are the light of the world." And as teachers, we are like this. We need to spend time in the sun every day to be able to shine. And that's just, it's so important, and it's come up many times these meetings. I think that it must be the thing that you're supposed to remember. Spend time with God every day. Once you're inspired, devotions can flow out of that, and you probably won't spend as much time preparing because you have it in you already. So spend time in the Word, spend time in the light, and then that will pass on the light to others. All right, and when do you all prepare? I sat in Jonah Avina's class 1 year. I'm positive he had this class. He says he didn't, but I remember him telling me. He said that he prepares right before the students get there so that he's already fired up and ready to go. For me, that doesn't work because I can't. Like, if I'm preparing right at the end like that, it means that I'm cramming and my devotionals won't quite be as well thought out. For me, it works best the night before. Does anybody else have what works for you when you are preparing? If not, we'll just keep going here. My co-teacher, I think he does his Sunday afternoon, possibly, on the Sunday afternoons that he has off. Okay, so we're going to go to this, where do you receive inspiration? I'm going to give you a few ideas. We already talked about the Bible. Use things very heavily from the Bible. One of my goals last year was to teach Bible knowledge. So a lot of the stories they know already, it does not hurt to go over those stories again. If this is more for younger, use this book. It's a very good book if you need stories. Another thing, there are lots of little stories that we sometimes skip over just because they're one or two verses long and the man's name is hard to say, or there's no name at all. I guess that's why it happens. I don't know if you know Jeremy Erb, but what he was substituting one time, and he told this very long, he said it took about 20 minutes to tell, very complicated, involved story about a man going through the woods. It was all snowy outside. He met a lion. He killed it and threw it in a pit. I don't remember how the story ended. But he got that out of one verse in, I think it's 2 Kings or 2 Chronicles. There's one verse, and it has all those details in there. He told them that story, and then he asked them if they thought it was true, and some of them thought it was, some of them thought it wasn't, and then he took them to the Bible. So you use those. If you're reading and paying attention to your Bible, you will find those little clips that you don't usually hear about. Okay, another place you can find things is church. Listen to the sermons. There are long words that preachers use that your students won't know. If you can take a long word, well, for me it was hypocrites. They didn't understand the idea of a hypocrite, so I used an object lesson. I forget what it was. Cups, you know, peanut butter on the inside, and then one clean cup on both sides, and then you talk about hypocrite, and they look good on the outside, but the insides are terrible. Take a complicated idea from church and put it in something that they can understand. One thing I've been toying with is reconciliation. I don't know if that's going to work. It's an idea that I have at the back of my head that I would like to try to explain to mine. I teach middle grades, so 3, 4, and 5. I don't know if I'll be able to get that across, but it is something I would like to try to have them understand. Nature. When you're feeling dry, take a hike. Get some fresh air into your lungs. One of my favorite places is back in the wilderness. There is this huge mountain way back in, and it's a 7-mile hike. Unfortunately, it's probably 5 hours away from where I teach, so when I'm feeling blue, I do tend to think about hiking back into the lake there right at the base of it. But just doing something like that, even just a small hike, does furnish you with inspiration. Okay, I'd like to hear some from you. Where else do you receive inspiration?
Personal experience doesn't ask me anything very big.
Right.
Use it as a lesson.
Yeah, personal stories. This thing here, I like to call my $1,500 pencil holder. It's part of a stacker, a hitch from a stacker. I was driving along, stacking, and a stacker, it has a tractor like this, and then you pull it in line for when you're going down the road. When you're in the field, it's offset, so it's like the tractor's here, and then you're pulling this wagon out on the side. And I had a full load, which is 12 bales, and about 6 ton on there, I think, with the weight of the bales that I was carrying. And I forgot to put this hitch in line. And we were going through this river bottom, and you had to cross this fairly narrow bridge. Anyway, so I forgot to put the hitch in line, and the whole stacker went over like that. The temporary fix was $1,500 till we could get the new part. Anyway, so this pencil holder sits on the front of my desk the whole year to remind students that mistakes are okay if you learn from them. I've never done that again. Use personal experiences. All right, something else.
So I guess I have a question.
Go ahead.
I know, like, I would use, like, okay, several. Adventure Calling was one book that I used quite a bit. Can you do that too much as far as pulling stories out of that book and then taking some of their thoughts and their own thoughts?
I don't know. I ran into that too. See, I told stories, and I told a lot of. It was like puppet stories, and so they're totally make believe. and I would tell these for devotions, and I was wondering the same thing. Because it's so fun to tell these stories, because the students like it. They get into it. And stories are very, very good for getting an idea across to your students. But when it's too much.
Jesus told stories all the time.
Yeah, that is a good point.
Remember my students remember me telling a story to them. They definitely remember the story, but they had no idea what the point was. That side with me a little bit. To make sure the point
goes. Right, and that's what one of my teachers, he said to keep it really simple. This, again, the picture is hilarious. You'll remember the picture, but it's also very, very easy to remember the point. It's said in one sentence, and especially for younger students. I'm not sure. Older students, you could probably go a little bit more complicated, but for me, I try to aim to put my lesson in one sentence. A lot of my devotionals last year were based out of Proverbs, because there are a lot of just one-liners in there that you can use for the punchline of your devotions. That was kind of, in a way, the idea is that you have your object, and then have a really easy way to remember the lesson to go with it. So I don't know if that answered the question or not.
I guess I have another question. I teach middle graders as well.
Mm-hmm.
How okay is it to start a story maybe and let them take it on? For example, maybe the story of Jonah.
Mm-hmm.
I start the story and these little fourth, fifth graders, their imaginations just start going right full gear.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine all kinds of different things that Jonah experienced.
Right.
Why he was running away.
Yeah.
All kinds of things. How is there a time when you just say, okay, that's enough? That's
definitely.
Or is it okay to pretty much let them take the devotional on as long as it's decent?
I like the idea of getting them thinking and being able to tell, especially like a Bible story like that. Jonah Vigneault would say that you need to do that. You start telling it, and maybe even throw a little bit of a wrong fact in there, and let them correct you. To keep them with you through it, because if there's class participation, they will. You know that they're helping. They're with you through it. Then.
And when you use children's imagination, when they are using their imagination, it makes it come alive.
Right.
So. Mm-hmm. The thing is that when you know this, you really have to know from the beginning where you're heading. So you just cannot let them invent something or imagine something from the story without you as a teacher knowing from the very beginning what's the target, what's the goal, you know? Then somehow, with their contribution, you along with them, you know, just go with them and a Bible message. Otherwise, it's just for fun, you know? They will have fun, but if there's no aim in it, it's...
Yeah, so what you're saying is let them do that, but then direct it.
You have to know from the beginning where you are headed. I mean,
yeah. You
know, in Jonah's story, what's the purpose? So you have to know from the beginning what you want to tell about Jonah, even though they build up the story.
Back to the thing of using imagination, the middle graders especially, they can sometimes have trouble with visualizing, and so it makes a problem for reading comprehension. And the thing of allowing them to help you, you know, tell the story can be an exercise in that, in visualizing it and using their imagination, which can help read them.
Right, a way for them to get into the story.
Well, I think too, I don't know, like maybe you guys are in Steve's history class, but he talked about moral imagination and like helping the students see things from another point of view. And there's so many stories in the Bible that, you know, we look at them from one point of view. And so, like, you know, take them around and try to view the story of Goliath from the Philistines' point of view. And, like, the terror and things like that. And I know that can help, like you said there, with
did that and that in the, you know, in the tummy. You have to, and then you bring them to science. And what do you feel if you're a scientist? Now they couldn't, you know, actually.
All right. Let's see. Make sure you, as a teacher, read. That is another place that you can get a lot of ideas. My latest favorite book is When the Game Stands Tall. It's not a book that you should read the whole way through unless you like football, because it describes, especially through the center of the book, it describes a lot of football games. It's very interesting if you're sitting in the tractor for long hours and have time to listen to that stuff. But if you are teaching, you could read maybe the first chapter and the last three. There's a lot of good stuff in there. If you come across When the Game Stands Tall, I forget who wrote it though. Anyway, but read. There's a lot of good books out there. Let's see, did I bring any other ones along the way that you use books like this? I love this book. It has a lot of random ideas that you can put into your.
The only time in the U.S. that's the only time. So yeah. I have to call it the U.S. But
he has another one called Censored Science.
Okay. It's kind of the same. Yeah.
What was the title?
It's called Brilliant. Bruce Malone, and it's actually available through C. Eliot's out there on the display rack. This book I have used at times. I tried reading through it to my students, but it didn't work so well. They did get bored with it. It does kind of hammer in a way on the same subject throughout. It's called Horse Stories, A Man Played with Sticks. It's out there as well. Probably if I would use this again, I would read a story and then tell it to my students, so that you can tweak the details a little bit to make sure they understand it. This one, it's just the place for ideas. Oh, hello, Joel. I'm really glad you're here. Okay, now I am getting lost in my notes, so if anybody has anything to say while I'm looking at them, you can do that.
One devotional class here that my brother did, he had him go around the circle and say something good about someone else in church. He went around the circle three times. It's really neat. And I don't know, this 15 student. It really was good to think about this.
Yeah.
It was interesting to hear what stood out to the student. And the morning before that, this was during achievement test, so we were together. Me and my students were there. Something that we struggle with, a personal struggle.
Oh, wow.
He said, confess your faults one day. That was kind of tough. There were a few of these little ones. He couldn't think of anything. It's good.
That's really good. That would almost be one of the ones that I would put on this guy here. You use it one time a year, and you use it in a pinch, and it's really good. Use it in the emergency plan. I like that.
Also, having some kind of classroom cues is helpful. My last year, I had like my character wall that I had just character in big letters,
mm-hmm.
and then I had different posters around it of different character traits. And you get in a pinch, you can always pull a character trait, and you can usually expound and have most character traits you can have come up with a Bible story on a pinch.
Yeah, I like that. I did a variation of that one year. I didn't have it up on the wall to start with, but throughout the year, I would do kind of the same thing. In a pinch, I would grab a character trait out of my stack, and we would talk about it, and then it would go up on the wall.
One book I used a lot, or last year, my students loved it, is the Character Sketches book. I don't know if any of you are familiar with those. They're really big books. There's three of them in a set. Talk a lot about animals, and then it gives a Bible story with it. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
I love it.
One of my co-teachers used that. Exact set. Thank you for reminding me of that. I'm going to put it on and ask her for it. But yeah, use animals. That is mostly what those are about.
Curious if anyone has used Dr. Seuss books.
I have. Yertle the Turtle is one that I did. And
Horton Hears You.
Oh, okay. I didn't read that one.
What was I scared of?
You
said that.
I know Brother John. I think Brother John always used all the places you go at the end of the year.
Okay.
But those can, like, I mean, you kind of have to be careful about using some of them as devotional books, but, like, they can come in, yeah, like, for, you know, the Butter Battle book. On occasion.
Yeah, yeah. You probably might start getting complaints if you do a series on it, but yeah. Okay. Okay. Let's see. Thank you for all your ideas. Let's see. There was one thing I was going to tell: to keep your sanity as a teacher, at the beginning of the year, do something like, try to whittle your devotional periods that you actually have down to one or two a week. Whole school singing is something that we do. I do room singing 1 week, or 1 day. And what's on the other day? I can't remember. Do you remember, Joel?
When we pray.
Okay, that I didn't do that this last year, but that is one day a week I do pray. Oh yeah, somebody comes in from church. Yeah, and then, so what I would do is student devotions on one day as well sometimes. And usually it ended up one or two devotionals per week that I would have. Okay, I would like to give you three pictures from the Bible yet that are for you as a teacher. If I can find where they are in my notes. The first one is, if you think about the widow who took Elijah in during that drought, every day she went to the barrel and there was enough food for that day. When you're giving devotionals, you should give enough food for that day. That is what you're doing. The next picture is also an assignment for you guys. Matthew 13 is a chapter that you should read. It has maybe three parables or four about sowing seed. Like that story that I told about Miss Krista, she gave me something from third grade that came back to me when I needed it way down the road. That is also what you're doing. So devotionals, when you give a devotional, they can fill two purposes, one for right now, and you're also sowing seed for later on in the year. And the third and last picture that I'd like you to give is kind of a way to approach each day in your classroom. You're bringing a lot of talents to the classroom that you will be able to impact these students with a lot of good or bad. The only way to really, really impact them is to come like the little lad did to Jesus. He brought his 5 barley loaves and 2 fish to Jesus, and his lunch probably would have been enough to feed himself. But when he brought it to Jesus, the results were way more than he could have ever imagined. So your talents by themselves, they may be enough to feed you, and you probably will be able to feed your students at least some, but as you bring them to Christ, there's no limit to what could happen. Thank you for being a part of this class. I really enjoyed it. You are dismissed.